Football Weekly is on the air.
Brady with Green Ellis in the backfield to his right. It is a first and goal to go at the Baltimore 7. Snap to Brady. Inside handoff to Green Ellis. Tragic right up the middle and into the end zone. Touchdown. Then Jarvis Green Ellis. And the Patriots drive 75 yards for the touchdown and the lead.
Everybody set. Snap is low. Kick on its way. It's got the distance and it is good. And Lawrence Kynes has done it again. He's kicked the Giants to the second Super Bowl in 4 years.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, we check in on the super teams.
Will Peyton Manning play again in 2012, and if so, where? And what are the future of Pro Bowl running backs in Atlanta and Chicago?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. Welcome to our pre-Super Bowl week edition of Pro Football Weekly. The Giants and Patriots are preparing for a rematch of Super Bowl 42. It is Pro Bowl weekend in Hawaii as the best of the NFL not playing in the Super Bowl. Get ready for the league's All-Star game. Plus Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama. We have our reporters there as well. We begin, as we always do, with The Way We Hear It, featuring news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. Senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric, one of your teams, the Vikings, they have the number 3 pick overall in the draft. They don't need a quarterback. They drafted one last year in the first round. Rick Spielman's down to the Senior Bowl, and apparently he's shopping down there.
Yeah, Wayne, the new general manager of the Vikings, he got promoted this past offseason, has been a little bit more visible, a little bit more vocal than normally, kind of spent last year in a bunker, so to speak. And I think one of the first messages he's getting out is that the Vikings' number 3 pick overall could be for sale. That's a pick that they could peddle if they get the right offer. You know, the name that buzzes around right now is Robert Griffin. You know, he could go number 2 in the Rams spot if they opt to trade out. But if not, that would be a very valuable piece of real estate, and they can move down and address several needs.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is to see how active, if at all, whoever the new GM and Jeff Fisher in St. Louis are going to be. My sense from what I'm hearing is that they are going to be loath to trade that number 2 pick because it's Justin Blackmon, and they're afraid if they deal down, you know, unless they were to go to 3 or maybe 4 or even, you know, probably 3 is where they'd have to be, that they might not be able to get him.
Yeah, I think that would be an ideal situation for the Vikings. They would love to sit back and let, you know, 3 or 4 teams, you know, jockey to try to get Griffin, who's going to be the buzz guy. You know, I mean, if Luck goes first, as everybody kind of assumes, you know, that's going to be the buzz position. Now, there's one player I think they would consider at number 3, and that's Matt Khalil, the left tackle out of USC. You know, if you're going to draft Christian Ponder, you might as well protect his backside. If you've got, you know, one of the best running backs in the game, and Adrian Peterson, you might as well have somebody who can block for him. So that's kind of the one guy that experts seem to think that they could stick around for.
Thank you very much, Eric. Associate Editor Eli Cabron is with us as well. Dennis Allen takes over as the new, and I should say surprise, head coach of the Oakland Raiders. Allen, a 1-year defensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. So where does this leave Denver, and how surprised are you that Dennis Allen is the new head coach of the Raiders, Eli?
Well, looking at the Denver situation, they've had constant turnover at the defensive coordinator spot. This is not anything new for them, but John Fox said he's in no rush to find a replacement. We've heard rumblings that Jack Del Rio, the former Jaguars coach, could be a candidate for that defensive coordinator job. So I think they're looking for someone that can do what Dennis Allen did, which is turn around this defense based on their pressure with Elvis Dumervil and Von Miller. So they're going to be looking for a candidate that fills that role.
Yeah, I'm doing this from memory, Eli, and my memory is slipping these days, but wasn't Del Rio with Fox in Carolina for a while before?
I believe he was. They go back. They've had a long history together, so that would be a natural fit if Del Rio is interested in returning to coaching.
You know, I think from the Raiders' perspective, this is a fascinating hire. I believe it's the first time in the history of the organization that they've had a head coach who didn't come from the offensive side of the football. And with Reggie McKenzie, a former linebacker, you might have expected it. But everybody thought that Reggie McKenzie was so wired into Joe Philbin and Winston Moss and Darren Perry, and while some of them got interviews, apparently the front runners were never from Green Bay.
Well, yeah, Hub, it's the first defensive coach since John Madden in 1969, so it's been a while. And yeah, the candidates from Green Bay, we all thought that those would be the guys that McKenzie would target, but instead he actually looked towards Dennis Allen and Mike McCoy, the Broncos offensive coordinator, and some other coordinators around the league. Those Packers guys never really were serious top candidates, which is a bit of a surprise.
Well, the last time they hired a defensive guy, John Madden, they eventually won a Super Bowl under John Madden. Maybe the same will hold true here eventually. Thanks very much, Eli. Appreciate it. Senior editor Dan Arkish is with us as well. Dan down in St. Louis, Chad. They got their man Jeff Fisher as head coach. They're putting together an all-star staff, coaching staff, that is. But there's still this lingering rumor out there that the Rams may up and leave and head back home to L.A. What do you hear?
Well, Wayne, you know, it all started at Jeff Fisher's introductory press conference when the owner, Stan Kroenke, decided that he just did not want to make any kind of commitment whatsoever to staying in St. Louis. He had the great opportunity to do so. And then, not long after that, the news breaks that the Rams are going to be playing games in London for the next 3 years, basically one home game a year there. And Kroenke has a soccer team already there, so all of a sudden you've got people thinking there's still the L.A. Ram possibility, the London Ram possibility. Kroenke now is also interested, supposedly, in buying the Los Angeles Dodgers, so he's doing everything but committing to the Rams.
Well, you know, Dan, the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire, and as much as you know, Kroenke allegedly bought the team to keep it in St. Louis, there's a lot of smoke here, because you add to this whole conversation this first-tier stadium lease deal, where apparently the city has to make commitment to additional improvements to keep it a first-tier facility, or he can get out of the lease. And you understand why the Rams fans in St. Louis are nervous.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, I mean, it's a little sketchy as to exactly what being a first-tier team is, but you have to kind of be considered in the top quarter. And just looking at all the, stadiums that have just been built with Jerry Jones's palace down there at the top, you got to think that this CVC, the convention committee, is going to have to come up with quite the proposal to sue Kroenke. Mm,
interesting. Dan, thank you very much. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. Listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we welcome in associate editor, Arthur Arkush. Arthur, Indianapolis, the hiring of Chuck Pagano. I got to tell you something, I am surprised. It really caught me off guard, but he's the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens. There's no question they've had great success defensively in Baltimore, and Chuck is part of that, obviously. But the other factor is this, doesn't this change the entire culture of the organization with the hiring of a defensive coach to run things out there in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, when Jim Irsay said that he was going to shake things up and, you know, start a new era of Colts football, he wasn't kidding, clearly. Ryan Grigson, a first-time GM, now they're adding a first-time head coach to that list. And Chuck Pagano, you hit on his defensive background, of course. You know, Tony Dungy had a defensive background, and then they went to Jim Caldwell, you know, former quarterback coach. So they're getting back to the defensive side of the football. And I have to admit, it's a bit of a surprise to me and to some of the people we're talking to as well. You know, Andrew Luck seems to be a foregone conclusion at this point. So a lot of the speculation, a lot of what we were hearing was that, you know, the next head coach was probably going to be an offensive guy who was going to be able to, you know, bring in the new era and Andrew Luck. So, you know, we're hearing good things about this hire. Pagano is a guy who is intense and certainly is going to kind of, as you mentioned, change the sort of persona. You know, Jim Caldwell was a pretty subdued guy and didn't tend to wear his emotions on his sleeve. So this is certainly a change of pace there. But, you know, major changes going on down in Indy.
Arthur, let's talk about the part of the story that goes hand in hand with this. And it's interesting. Ryan Grigson, I think, is a great hire, but it's pretty clear at this point, even though he's got the GM title, he was brought there to be a personnel director. Jim Irsay is running this show on his own. And Peyton Manning sounds to me, for all the world, like a guy who is trying to talk his way out of Indianapolis. You know, he says he wants to stay there, play his whole career there, but the quotes he had this week about walking on eggshells around there, there's nobody I recognize, it's a bad place to be. You know, I think Irsay probably would like to keep him if he's healthy, but it's starting to sound like Peyton doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, I think so too. And we have to, you know, remember that Peyton is a very calculated guy. He doesn't say a lot of things without, you know, major purpose behind them. So when he scheduled these interviews this week with the Indianapolis Star and the New York Times and talked about, you know, a culture that wasn't good for healing and, you know, went out of his way on multiple occasions to say that, you know, business and personal decisions are two separate things. It certainly sounds like a guy who may have, you know, perhaps taken his last snap as a member of the Colts.
All right, thank you very much, Arthur. Let's welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan, Matt Forte, the injured running back of the Chicago Bears who missed the last, what, quarter of the season or more, he'll play in the Pro Bowl this weekend, and he's a free agent right now. The Bears not happy about it, are they?
Well, if you hear, you know, Lovie Smith said at the end of the season that he supports the decision Matt makes is behind him playing in the Pro Bowl, and he's been cleared by doctors. He was injured, had that sprained MCL, but now is healed. He was expected to be cleared. It wasn't anything amazing and not an amazing recovery at all that he was ready to go at this point for that injury. But he does have free agency coming up, so he's taking a risk by putting himself out there and agreeing to play. But you know, this was his decision. He's been wanting to go. It's been a goal of his to get to the Pro Bowl. This is his first trip there, and he takes a lot of pride in getting there. And he didn't want to pass up an opportunity to make an appearance.
I'm guessing the guy who's the least happy about it is his agent, Dan. I mean, I don't care how you spin it. This is just dumb. I mean, personally, I don't understand why anybody wants to play in the Pro Bowl, but that aside, there's guys who do. But to have missed the last four games, even if the knee is 100%, I will never forget the story of Robert Edwards, a kid who, after his rookie year, wasn't even in the game, went out there for a rookie promotion of some kind, ended his career down there. You know, as this guy stares at his payday to do this, it just makes no sense.
Well, I think he's heard that kind of talk from a lot of people close to him as well, Hub. I don't think you're alone in thinking that at all. He's taking that into account, and he knows what's on the line. Matt Forte, I don't think, is a dumb person, but he's a very prideful person, and he doesn't want to, you know, this is something he's always dreamt of being a part of, and to pass it up when he can go down there and make a statement and say, you know, this is what I'm all about, this is who I am. He's weighed the factors, and that's the one he likes.
Well, Hub, you get maybe the feeling that he wants to show people he's healthy, he can run the football, but the pluses, you know, they don't outweigh the minuses in that thing in terms of risk of the Pro Bowl, but nonetheless, you can understand why he wants to go and wants to be a part of it. Atlanta, let's talk a little bit about that, Dan Parr, another one of your teams. Talk about running backs. They've got a great one, Michael Turner. What's his status going forward? Are the Falcons thinking about cutting ties with him because of age and mileage on those wheels?
To be clear about this, nothing from the team, nothing they have said suggests that they are ready to part ways with Michael Turner. They have said that they are going to evaluate how best to use him, whether he needs to have his carries come down. You know, this is the only back in the league to exceed 300 carries in three of the past four seasons. They've relied heavily on Michael Turner to be the backbone of that offense. But there's a lot of talk in Atlanta for media fans and the like that, you know, maybe it's time to move on. Maybe they do need to get away from Michael Turner. He's a couple weeks away from turning 30. He has 2 years left on his deal. We know what happens to backs a lot of times once they get up to that age. You don't see the same thing from them, and the breakdown can come fast and furious. So there's some concerns, some questions just lingering there about what Michael Turner's role will be in Atlanta if he's back next season.
And Wayne, a $5 million salary cap hit, or that's what they're going to pay him if he is back, so part of the consideration too.
That's always part of the consideration. More news and notes still ahead on our pre-Super Bowl edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to our pre-Super Bowl week edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. A couple of our reporters are down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and among them is Senior Editor Mike Wilkening. And Mike, first off, before we get to some of the college talent you're looking at down there, Chuck Pagano is the new head coach at Indianapolis, the Ravens defensive coordinator. Now the Ravens are in the market for a D coordinator. What do you hear there?
Well, this is nothing new for the Ravens. They have to be going to find a new defensive coordinator. Wayne, obviously, even going back to Rex Ryan, the hiring there, you know, Greg Madsen leaving to take the job at Michigan. This will be the fourth time that John Harbaugh has had to change coordinators. And reportedly, Dean Pease, the linebackers coach, looks like he's the favorite for the job. And really, this is sort of a plug-and-play situation for a coordinator in Baltimore. There's obviously a ton of talent and a ton of veteran talent. So when it comes down to it, there aren't a ton of tweaks or a ton of things that really have to be done there, because you have the blue-chip talent at a lot of the key positions. And then it just comes down to who's going to be the voice that's going to lead that room.
Yeah, it's funny, Mike. You mentioned, of course, Rex Ryan and Greg Maddison, but even before them, first Marvin Lewis leaves, then Mike Nolan leaves. It's like a rite of passage before the Super Bowl that the Ravens need a new D coordinator. What were the aftershocks? Lee Evans not being able to hold on that football, Billy Cundiff not being able to put it through the uprights.
Well, I mean, this was a game that, by the numbers, the Ravens, had every right to think they should have won. I think outplayed New England on a number of levels. But, you know, look, I think there's a lot of focus on those two plays you mentioned. Obviously, Lee Evans, this was a disappointing season for him. He had played well in this game until the pass he could not secure in the end zone. And then Cundiff, who has really kind of struggled this year, I think, overall. You know, what happened on that final kick there? Confusion as to whether or not it was third or fourth down. I guess the scoreboard reportedly said third down, so there was some confusion there. You saw Cundiff on television running out late, which kind of screwed up the rhythm of the play. When it comes down to it, it's always been something for Baltimore in games like this. They've played well, in certain facets, and they've just been a step or two short. And I think as you look at 2012, this is a team with the talent that again to contend. But the question is, how many more runs can you really legitimately put together? And this is a team that's had good injury luck over the years and all of those things. This is a real missed opportunity.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Mike. And as that field goal hooked wide left they shot the sideline, I just said to myself, my God, this might be it for Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and some great defensive players on that team. We know Pittsburgh's defense is old and in need of some repair, although they were the number one defense of the league. Where is Baltimore in the chronological order of defenses? Are they close to being over the hill?
You know, they have age concerns with certainly Lewis and Reed and, most importantly, whom will replace them down the road. But, I think overall, this is a team that's drafted well over the years. Terrell Suggs, Haloti Ngata, they have found guys that have been able to fill roles in lower rounds, too, over the years. Lardaeus Webb at corner looks like he's going to be an impact player for years to come. Pernell McPhee in this draft last year, defensive lineman, some pass rush ability. They continue to build around the core of guys that they have, but you're right. I mean, some of these guys have been on this stage for so long, particularly Lewis, that you have to wonder how many more opportunities they're going to get.
Mike Wayne mentioned the Steelers. Let me ask you quickly. They need a new offensive coordinator, a little more controversial situation than Chuck Pagano getting a head coaching job. Bruce Arians' contract not renewed. Ben Roethlisberger somewhat vocal, not being happy about it. What's the story in Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, this was a situation where Bruce Arians has been sort of, a source of criticism, I think, when things haven't gone well offensively. This is an offense that really, I think, this year underachieved to a certain extent. They didn't score maybe as much as you might have expected. But Bruce Arians was the guy that was close with Ben Roethlisberger. It led sort of, more of a pass-first approach in that offense. Now the question is, with him no longer in Pittsburgh, first of all, who replaces him? Secondly, how does that coordinator work with Ben Roethlisberger? And thirdly, how does this offense change? You think it still would have to be a pass-first attack. They have such good weapons on that side of the ball. But, any change that might come, do they start to run it a little bit more? How does this offense change? I think that's the big question in Pittsburgh.
Mike, you're down to the Senior Bowl. We've got a little over a minute left. Give us an update on some of the guys, some of the players that are jumping out at you as you watch these practices.
I've tried to watch the line play closely, and a few guys that have jumped out on the north, Mike Adams, the offensive tackle, I think the potential is really evident with him. He needs some work, but, a big guy and moves very well, so he's a guy to keep an eye on. Cam Johnson, the Virginia defensive end, outside linebacker, speed off the edge. Certainly you're looking for pass rushers in this pass-first league. He's a guy that's jumped out. Mike Brewster, the center from Ohio State, has also played well. On the south, Melvin Ingram, the defensive lineman, I think has really shown some pass rush potential, low, quick, to the ground. I think he's going to be a guy that could get some first-round consideration. And Courtney Upshaw, the Alabama defensive lineman, obviously he has been very, very good. Might be an outside linebacker or a defensive end in the pros, but wherever he is, you'd think he's a first-round pick.
Senior editor Mike Wilkening. Stay tuned. Kevin Fishbane, also in Mobile to the Senior Bowl, has way we hear it on the new coach at Miami and keeping an eye on some standouts on the offensive side of the football at the Senior Bowl. Pro Football Weekly after these messages.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish, Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. And Kevin, what of your teams on your beat, the Miami Dolphins? Joe Philbin, the Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator, named the new head coach of the Dolphins. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, you know, obviously he wasn't the Dolphins' first choice. Maybe he wasn't their second choice. You know, they wasn't the splash that you thought Stephen Ross was really trying to make. He wasn't, you know, the young Don Shula he was looking for. But I think Joe Philbin, as you know, Wayne, has a ton of respect around the league, especially for what he's done in Green Bay. And Miami needs an offensive spark. They need to get that offense going. And they're very set on developing that quarterback position, improving the quarterback position. And, you know, Joe Philbin, especially the candidates they interviewed, is the best person to help do that. Really just bringing a clean slate in, trying to start anew for this regime that really has struggled with Tony Sperano there. And they need to kind of just start fresh. And it's a very important kind of next couple of years for Jeff Ireland as well, to see if this works out with Joe Philbin there.
You know, it's interesting to me, Kevin, and I don't want to throw stones here, but the owner, as near as I can tell, has screwed things up every way he can over the last couple of years. I mean, he's the one who hung himself out there and made it clear he wanted a big-name coach who was going to sell tickets. He didn't get that done. I personally think he's made a really good hire here. I think a lot of it is going to depend on two things: his defensive coordinator, curious if there's any chance Todd Bowles sticks around, and I believe it's Ireland himself who's dropping hints that they expect to be a player for Peyton Manning.
Yeah, you know, I think that Ross, I'm sure, would love to have Peyton Manning there. You know, that would certainly sell some tickets down in South Florida. And you're right, Hubby. I think Stephen Ross made a lot of mistakes along the way. He's obviously a new owner. He's a little brash in some of the ways he goes about doing things. And he certainly doesn't know football very well. And, you know, but in his loyalty to Jeff Ireland, it's possible that that cost him a chance at Jeff Fisher. We don't know the full details of that, but it certainly was part of the story there. But, you know, this team has a lot of tools on the roster right now. When you look at some of the pieces they have in that defense, and you look at the offensive line and Brandon Marshall and the way Reggie Bush played, the tools are there for this team to get back to being competitive, but they need to figure out that quarterback position, and we'll see that defense. It looks like it's going to be switching to a 4-3, so that's going to be another change to kind of keep an eye on, because that defense played pretty well for the most part last season.
Kevin, let's talk about another one of your clubs, the Buffalo Bills running back Fred Jackson, apparently not going to get the contract extension. They like what they saw of C.J. Spiller late in the season. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, CJ came through big at the end of the season. He had a few great games, you know, running the ball and catching passes out of the backfield. And I think that, you know, he wanted to prove that he can be, you know, he's not going to get a 20-25 carry guy. And Chan Gailey admitted that as much. But I think CJ Spiller showed how great he is in the open field. And in the Bills offense, he was really the only Bills offense late in the season when the passing game completely fell apart. You know, Fred Jackson wanted that extension earlier in the season, and, you know, I think he might have gotten it if he had stayed healthy. And they want Fred to stay in Buffalo. I mean, they want him to finish his career in Buffalo. He means a lot to that franchise. I think he's very loyal to Buffalo. He's not going anywhere. And Buddy Nix went ahead and said, look, we still have him for another 14 months. His contract runs through 2012. I just don't think they're going to, you know, break the bank at all for a guy who's, you know, is getting up there in age. And now that what they've saw out of C.J. Spiller, it makes it easier for them to say, well, we'll extend you. We'll keep you here for the rest of your career. But, you know, but you're not going to get a ton of guaranteed money because we got Spiller right here next to you.
You know, Kevin, in a strange way, this is kind of a microcosm of everything that is wrong about the NFL and the relationship between players and management and the salary cap and salary structure and how these contracts are not guaranteed. There's not a better story in football than Fred Jackson. There may not be a lot of better guys, but you're looking at a running back pushing 30. This is his one chance to get paid. And it sounds like he's probably going to get screwed by people who claim to want to reward him. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Kevin Fishbane, associate editor with us. He also, like Mike Wilkening down at Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Kevin, I guess a couple of quarterbacks and some wide receivers have caught your eye. One of the guys I wanted to ask about is Russell Wilson, the quarterback out of Wisconsin, who had such a great senior year or final year at Wisconsin after playing at North Carolina State. How has he fared in these practices?
Well, Wayne, for the next couple months, all you're going to hear about is Russell Wilson's height. And he is small, and you can tell it when you're out here on the field with him. You know, you see it when he's in the pads, and he's clearly smaller than Brandon Weeden and some of the other, you know, 6'3", 6'4", quarterbacks you're used to. But he has played very well this week. He's really impressed me. He's got great zip on the ball. He's been very accurate. And the thing with Russell Wilson, you talk to him, and his intangibles are through the roof. You know, great leader. You saw
what he did, stepping into that Wisconsin program, taking over that team, getting them to the Rose Bowl in his last college season. He is very athletic, great feet, can move outside the pocket, and he really wants to succeed as a pocket quarterback, though. You know, I asked him about his mobility, and that way he can get outside those tall offensive linemen. He goes, look, you know I have that ability, but I would like to be able to stay in the pocket, and I know I can make those throws. So he's confident, and I think you're going to see his stock go up a little bit. You know, teams are going to be afraid of that hype, but he's really showed well throwing the football.
Yeah, and I'm just going to extend you for a minute here, Ken, because the problem is he's not even as tall as Drew Brees, is he? Because I know that's the comparison he'd like to have made.
Right, he's not even that tall, and actually another guy here, Kellen Moore, is even shorter than Russell Wilson. He's had kind of a tough week as well. So, you know, Drew Brees is the name you're going to keep hearing, and Mike Shanahan was asked about it yesterday, and he, you know, Shanahan said, you know, ideally, of course, you would love to have your quarterback be 6'4", 6'5", and Drew Brees continues to be the poster child, kind of keeping the hopes and dreams of a Russell Wilson alive, but he's really going to need a team to take a chance on him. Maybe we'll see a team kind of that has maybe a quarterback who is slow-footed bring Russell Wilson in, and we've seen so many more of these kind of spread packages around the NFL just to kind of spark the offense. Maybe somebody will take a chance on Russell Wilson in that regard because, again, he's got a great arm and the intangibles are there.
Now that we've been to the Senior Bowl, coming up, our first mock draft of the postseason when Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to our pre-Super Bowl edition of Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff of editors. This is Wayne Larrabee. In this week's edition, we take a look at Pro Football Weekly's first mock draft of the postseason as put together by Nolan Naraki, our draft expert. And Hub, first off, underclassmen are going to supplement this draft. This is not a strong senior class we're talking about, but an NFL record 65 underclassmen were added to this draft, and that certainly upgrades the talent level.
It really does, Wayne, and normally at this time we're starting to settle in and focus on a dozen or so players. Now, we will do between six or seven mock drafts between now and the last week in April. It's the first one, the most fun. There has to be some flexibility here, but what's really interesting is we are projecting 20 underclassmen of the 32 first-round picks, and so these are kids we're still trying to get our arms around, get a little better measurements and speeds, but right now the bulk of the talent is definitely in the juniors and third-year sophomores.
And as far as defense goes, defensive tackle crop stands out for its strength atop the draft, with six being projected in the first round. A number of quarterbacks, receivers, and linemen, of course, will get pushed into the first round because of great demand at those positions, despite not grading that high. But the guy who's graded high right from the get-go is Andrew Luck, the quarterback out of Stanford in Indianapolis, at least Jimmy Irsay. If you can believe the owner, Hub, they're going to take him number one.
You know, I don't think there's any question that they're going to, irrespective of the decision on Peyton Manning. Whether Manning stays in Indy or not, they're going to draft Andrew Luck, and I think it's the smart thing to do. And then we've got Justin Blackmon, the wideout out of Oklahoma State, to the Rams. Matt Khalil, the offensive left tackle out of USC, to the Vikings. And at four, Robert Griffin III to the Browns. Now, we believe those four players will come off the board probably in that order, but whether there will be trading involved to get them is a little harder for us to say. And then at number five, Trent Richardson, we're projecting to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Some people would say they've got LeGarrette Blount. Why do you see that? Because Trent Richardson is probably the best running back to come out of college football in the last 4 or 5 years.
You know, Javi, you mentioned there might be some maneuvering, some trading going on, and we talked about it in the way we hear it. Rick Spielman shopping that number three pick of the Minnesota Vikings. Washington Redskins want to beef up that defense, and they're going for a cornerback out of LSU, Morris Claiborne. What do you know about him? Is he a shutdown type corner?
Oh, he's, everybody loves him. They think he's the next. You saw the impact that Patrick Robinson had on the Arizona Cardinals as a returner this year. He'll do some of that, but more than that, he's a guy who will take away half the football field from some of these big time passing offenses. Redskins are the team, though. They'd rather have a quarterback, but they don't see, they know they're not going to get Luck, and they'd be afraid, even with RG3, to try and count on him as a rookie. So they may figure they've got to deal with the quarterback position elsewise. They'll probably be a big player in the Peyton Manning trade talks if they in fact come to fruition, and they will take the best defensive player on the board here, a difference maker in Claiborne.
Jacksonville Jaguars drafted a young quarterback. Now they're getting him some protection. Offensive left tackle Riley Reiff out of Iowa. And you know, he's another one of those. Iowa's produced a lot of quality offensive linemen under Kirk Ferentz's tenure down there in Iowa City. And this might be the next of the best.
Yeah, and the Jags have invested heavily in offensive and defensive linemen the last couple of years under Gene Smith. They've got Eben Britton they took in the first round a couple of years ago. But they figure Reiff is the true possibly left tackle, the blindside protector. They can always kick Britton inside. And, again, underclassman, really good-looking player. He's a kid who's going to be really graded and watched closely at the combine and his pro day so people can get a little closer to what he's really got.
Well, the Carolina Panthers with the eighth pick. We've got them selecting defensive tackle out of LSU, Michael Brockers, Miami with the ninth pick. Mark Barron, a safety from Alabama, and the Buffalo rounds out the top ten. We're projecting Courtney Upshaw, outside linebacker, Alabama. So you've got the offense early in the top ten picks, but the defense soon to follow.
Well, it shouldn't surprise anybody, both the top ten and the first round loaded with Alabama and LSU defensive players. We saw how well they did in college. We just didn't know which of the underclassmen were coming out. Most of them have. Courtney Upshaw as a senior, who we knew was coming out, and he is looking like he could be the next great thing at that outside linebacker position, whether it's in a 3-4 or a 4-3.
Multiple picks in the first round. The Bengals have the 17th and 21st picks at the moment. The Patriots, the 27th and 32nd picks, depending on how things break in the postseason of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we look for the Bengals to draft two players there, but with the Patriots, you know that Belichick loves to use one of those picks and trade the other one to get another number one next year, or maybe load up a few number twos. One thing that's a given in every draft these days, the New England Patriots will have the most high picks, and the rich just keep getting richer.
Mock draft number one from Pro Football Week. Many more to follow. We check in with the super teams next on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with our pre-Super Bowl edition of Pro Football Weekly. The New England Patriots are back in the big game for the fifth time under coach Bill Belichick and quarterback Tom Brady. Their last appearance 4 years ago against these New York Giants, and the undefeated Pats were a heavy favorite back then. Checking up on the AFC champions is Mike Petrelia.
Several times Sunday night as he was handing the AFC championship trophy off to different players, Patriots owner Robert Kraft touched his fingers to the left side of his chest, then to his lips, and then pointed to the sky. He was remembering his late wife, Myra Kraft, who lost her battle with cancer July 20th, just 5 days before the Patriots owner helped settle the NFL labor dispute. These 2011 Patriots are the perfect embodiment of the spirit of Myra Kraft, and that is what touches Robert Kraft's heart the most. He made that much very clear this week in giving thanks to his head coach, Bill Belichick, and the players who have made possible his sixth trip to the Super Bowl as team owner. There were just seven Patriots on the active roster that were on that team that lost in Glendale, Arizona to the Giants. These Giants have 15 players remaining from Super Bowl 42, a game Kraft admitted he's never been able to watch on replay.
Well, I've never been able to watch it. I do remember the end of the game, a ball going through our cornerback hands, that if he had caught that ball and it hadn't gone through his hands, we would have been able to take a knee and we would have won the game. And, you know, that Eli doing a great job escaping from that pile of guys we had on him, and whether the whistle blows and the great catch and all these things, you know, in the end, there's a lot of little things. That was a great game and that was a great team, and we're looking forward to having the privilege of going to Indianapolis.
Meanwhile, all eyes will be on Rob Gronkowski as he attempts to get his left ankle ready for the game. He'll have an extra week after Bernard Pollard came down hard on Gronk's left ankle and turned it badly in the AFC Championship game last Sunday. He was spotted on Monday wearing a walking boot on the foot in the Patriots locker room. Patriots leave Sunday for Indianapolis and will be the designated home team, while the Giants leave Monday and will be the visitors. In New England with the Patriots, I'm Mike Petrelia, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, I think the cynical among us wonder sometimes how much of this is real, how much of it is somewhat contrived. But when Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, after scoring the first touchdown of the game against the Baltimore Ravens, came up touching the patch for Myra Kraft on his jersey as opposed to celebrating wildly in the end zone as he went to his teammates, it showed me this this is real, and it was very impressive, and I thought it was one of the great moments of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Hub. And Bob Kraft, well-respected across the NFL, one of the good guys in the NFL, and one of the guys who was instrumental in getting this season underway. The New York Giants won just 9 regular season games this campaign, but by January, they proved to be the best in the NFC with victories over the Atlanta Falcons, the world champion Green Bay Packers, and the San Francisco 49ers. We take a look at the NFC champs through the always unique view of Bart Pastrna.
Seeing that that we had a talented team, believing in that team, thinking that, you know, if we could only get all these pieces together, we maybe would have a chance to make ourselves recognized.
Yes, Coach Coughlin and the Giants certainly are, but who would have thunk it? Certainly not the biggest odds makers, and even after a fast start, maybe not even Giants fans, who are being accustomed to second-half swoons. But this NFL season, Big Blue reverse swooned, became embroiled in a race for the final place in the NFC playoffs, then ran the table to reach Super Bowl 46 in Indianapolis against a foe they bested in the regular season, New England, a franchise that QB Eli Manning topped back in Super 42. The now veteran quarterback doesn't want to hear how you can't spell elite without Eli, doesn't want to delve into ancient NFL history, does want to talk about the work that goes into a league championship appearance. In fact, how much of the groundwork is laid for the showdown with the Pats before Manning's G-men even land in Indy?
Everything's in. I mean, I'd say it's 95% complete. There might be a few additions that week. Kind of the more film you look at, you might change a few things, but really, and from the standpoint of the coaches and the players, our preparation will be done.
That's because Eli and company know firsthand what a zoo the actual week before the Super Bowl can become. And while preparation doesn't guarantee anything, it does leave time for other things, like getting key personnel such as Akeem Nicks and Ahmad Branshaw up to speed physically, and of course, those tweaks that Manning spoke of. You have to think there'll be a few of those when getting ready for double O Belichick's Pats. But hey, Entrell Roll, no matter the outcome of Super Sunday, it's been a great ride for your Giants, considering the situation New York was in a month or so ago.
I never speak of any type of losing situations. That's not in my mind. That's not what I'm made up of, and that's what this team is made up of, and neither do we need to hear that. I think, we're full aware of what's at stake, and we understand what kind of preparation is going to take in order for us to go out there and be victorious versus an outstanding football team.
If you're keeping score at home, cross off losing as an option. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pastrna.
Thank you very much, Bart. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, I'm sure people are getting tired of hearing it from me, but as long as the league insists on doing it every year, I'm going to complain about it every year. This year and this week, we get to get ready for the most meaningless exercise in sports this Sunday night, the Pro Bowl from Honolulu, Hawaii. Now, I love Honolulu. I love Hawaii. I can't stand the Pro Bowl. It's a silly game. They play it with different rules. They risk the most important assets that the NFL has, and there's nothing to gain from it. It's not entertaining. You know, you get a lot of sideline interviews with players whose head's not in the game. It's on the sidelines. Players get a great trip to Hawaii. But why doesn't somebody finally wake up and just bite the bullet? The NFL and pro football are not well-designed or well-suited for an all-star game. There's too much risk. It's not a good product, and there's no real benefit to it. We got a bunch of guys who are all-stars who won't play now because they're in the Super Bowl the following week. I get why the league does it. I just think it's time to say we can't wring every penny possible out of this sport and give an inferior product.
Yeah, but Hub, they'll be tweeting from the sidelines.
Oh, that's exciting.
That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Giants and Patriots Radio Networks. The coordinating producer and engineer, Pro Football Weekly, is Randy Meyer. PFW originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week with our Super Bowl edition of Pro Football Weekly.